This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
Monster!
Aquaman. Wanna Beast. Shazam. Plastic Man. Green Arrow. Green Lantern. Firestorm. Batgirl. Blue Beetle. Black Orchid. Booster Gold.
Mission accomplished.
Looks like Gotham City isn't just a one cape crusader kind of town anymore. Team up with Batman, the Brain of the Bold.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 284 of the DCAU Review. And I am Liam, and with me, as he always is Cal. Cal, it's the spooky season, as every person in their 20s and 30s and 40s now probably we'll say around this time of year. Halloween this coming week, at least on the original air date when we dropped this episode. And we have an appropriately, well, it's not really a scary episode, but there's some spooky characters to talk about in this week's Elseworlds review.
That's right. There are elements of spooky all weaved in and out of this episode. And
this would be rated PG-13 for like terrifying elements or one of those weird ratings that they.
Right.
Throw on something.
A generalization of horrifying moments. Frightening imagery.
There you go.
Yes, that's right, Liam. We are back at one of our favorite Elseworlds. I mean, they're all our favorites. We enjoy most. Well, I shouldn't say
that. This one's my favorite.
Most of them are our favorites. We enjoy a lot of the trips that we take around the multiverse. But this week's Elseworld takes us to our prized possession, our star student. It is, of course, the Batman, the Brave and the Bold. And it is the episode Trials of the Demon! And yeah, it's a fun episode. We do have some Halloween elements in our little prologue, and then the actual episode itself, as you mentioned, doesn't necessarily take place on or around Halloween, but definitely has ghosts, demons, zombies. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of different elements there. Yeah, a lot of different scary elements happening here. So yeah, lots to talk about being the season and all. Unless you're listening to this episode in like April or something like that, in which case it's just another Elseworlds episode.
That's right. But yes, we look forward to getting into Trials of the Demon this week. But before we get into our breakdown of this episode, Cal, I must, of course, first grace us with another official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode. And of course, the IMDb synopsis on this show is brought to you by The Pod Tower. You can head to youtube.com/ThePodTower and not only find the home of all of our podcasts, that's our official YouTube home for the podcast, but you can also find content from shows like Jump on the Batwagon and Tim Talk, as well as some archive live stream from our friends over at Watchtower Database. Lots of great stuff if you're a DCAU fan, which of course you are. You're listening to us. So go ahead and check out youtube.com/ThePodTower. But I think before I get to the actual reading of it, you got to hit us with that air date, Cal.
That's right, Liam. And just a quick reminder, this episode originally aired on March the 20th, at least here in the United States, on the Cartoon Network, 2009, meaning we just surpassed the 14-year anniversary of this episode's original debut here in the United States.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for Trials of the Demon, written by Todd Casey, directed by Michael Chang, with music by our dynamic music partners, and animation by Dong Wu. And that synopsis reads as such. magically transported to 19th century London, Batman aids Etrigan the Demon and Sherlock Holmes in battling Gentleman Jim Craddock, the future Gentleman Ghost.
Wow. Pretty good. That was really solid. Yeah.
Not a bunch of run-on sentences. Got in, got out.
You mentioned characters that were actually featured on the episode. Yeah, you didn't stop mid-sentence.
Long-time listeners will know these. None of the things that Cal just said are guarantees when it comes to these IMDb synopses. Actually explaining what happens in the episode in a succinct fashion. Kind of a rarity. More rare than you think.
It's a difficult process sometimes for our IMDb contributors to do so. Great job today by this particular contributor who deserves a copywriting job for the TV guide, if that still exists.
Absolutely. A plus there. And as we begin to get into our plot breakdown, we will just mention we will do all of our social media plugs and all that at the end, like we also do. But as a little teaser, we will have another review to read out that someone left on their podcast app of choice. Mm-hmm. And as a reminder, if you write us a review and you give us 5 stars, has to be 5 stars, and we rate it on the show, we will send you a little gift ski if you're in the US. So just a little teaser for something that will come up at the end of the show. But right now, Cal, let's get into breaking down this week's episode, Trials of the Demon. And as you mentioned, we do have a little, the most Halloween-y thing that happens is our little prologue, our little short that happens before the theme song, as we see Batman and the Flash, but maybe not a Flash we're as familiar with, this being Jay Garrick's Flash, the original Golden Age Flash. And they're taking on Scarecrow and Scream Queen, and Scarecrow has a holiday appropriate scheme up his sleeve.
Your Halloween trail of terror dead ends here.
Oh, whoa, wait, Scream Queen. Let's first offer our trick-or-treaters some candy.
Fear gas.
Indeed. I've genetically modified this year's entire pumpkin crop to emit my fear gas when heated. Every jack-o'-lantern in this city is a ticking time bomb.
I'll take Scarecrow. You handle the pumpkins.
Make sure that overgrown Boy Scout doesn't steal our treats.
That's right, Liam. He's got a special batch of fear gas whipped up, planted inside each and every pumpkin stationed in and around Gotham City. So that means
man hours. This was quite an undertaking.
Seriously. So he's going to cause the pumpkins to explode, or when they get lit, the gas is going to disperse, creating an entire city of fear, as the line would go. And it appears that Batman and the Flash in this are a bit overmatched. Is it would seem that's quite the undertaking to contain an entire city's worth of Halloween pumpkins. But of course, the fastest man alive is the man for the job, as he runs off and Batman is left to take on the Scarecrow and his goons. The Scream Queen does chase after the Flash, attempting to stop him, but is Batman versus a bunch of guys in skeleton suits, also known as Fortnite soldiers, I think. Not that Fortnite was around in 2009, but hey, they live on today. Those guys in the classic skeleton costumes are running around on Fortnite. So, he has some fisticuffs with them before coming mano a mano with the Scarecrow himself, who is brandishing his classic scythe or sickle, depending on your preferred word for it. And he and Batman go one-on-one. Meanwhile, the Flash is quickly racing around, attempting to gather up the pumpkins, but Scream Queen, as we said, is in hot pursuit. She manages to delay him initially, but he ends up throwing a pumpkin into her mouth, which causes her to be affected by the fear gas, seeing a quite scarier version of the Flash. Meanwhile, back with Batman and Scarecrow, Batman is able to upend the Scarecrow and feeds him a dose of his own medicine, breaking his sickle in half and overtaking him. The Scarecrow believes it doesn't matter that he's wasted enough time and that it's much too big of an undertaking for these two men to stop his plan. But as he opens his door to his hideout to escape, there is a mountain of pumpkins awaiting for him, much to his surprise, which happened to tumble down and kill him? Question mark? You would think a heavy gourd-like object like a pumpkin is, if you had 20 to 30 pumpkins land on you, that you might have serious internal injuries. But
keeping in mind that, yes, this is a landfill size. This is every pumpkin in the city, according to the Scarecrow's own words that just fell on him.
Yeah, so somehow I guess Scarecrow survives, because I see he is featured in some episodes later. Mm-hmm. But yes, we the funny bit, of course, that occurs is that the beginning of the process, Batman is speaking to the Flash, who leaves him high and dry to go start the pumpkins, or saving the city from the pumpkins. And at the very end, a mob of angry Gothamites show up to give the Flash and Batman what for, since the Flash rounded up and stole all of their pumpkins without an explanation. And the Flash looks to Batman to help him with an explanation, and Batman has disappeared faster than the Flash disappeared on him. So that's the end of our little prologue there. A fun little bit there. I'd say it's a nice little 5-minute story there, as most of the prologues for these episodes are, and nice self-contained little story, a little comedy, a little bit of action. You get a little bit of everything there.
Absolutely. Always. I always love these little vignettes that they do at the start of each episode. It's just a fun way, and fun ways to get characters who maybe aren't going to get a lot of full episode adventures in this show into the show. Not a lot of, I think there is one other episode that features Jay Garrick, but not a lot of Jay Garrick Flash animation content in general. So fun to see him pop up for this quick little visit. But yes, after our wonderful theme song, which we'll talk about later, we do get to the adventure, and we actually go very far back in the past, as mentioned in our synopsis, back to 19th century London. And we see a woman walking in the rain, and a mysterious man in a carriage pulls up and offers her safety from the bad weather. And before you know it, we hear a scream, and we come across none other than Sherlock Holmes and Watson, who are just real people, as it turns out, in this world.
Mm-hmm.
As they come across the remains of this woman, she isn't dead, but she's been turned into this sort of horrified, zombified husk. And it's remarked early on that this is, I believe, the seventh victim of this mysterious man, and that there's something mystical afoot, something way more supernatural than perhaps what Holmes and Watson are used to. And thankfully, we get a angry mob / exposition dump crowd forming, who informs us that it must be the work, all of this terrible supernatural business must be the work of none other than Jason Blood, who's always up to something strange and mystical.
But Holmes, are you certain it's not that Moriarty fellow?
Stop being an imbecile, Watson. Moriarty's weapon of choice is a unique air rifle assembled by a blind German mechanic. I fear they may be supernatural.
She's alive, but looks as though she's under some sort of spell.
Just like the others. Did any of you see the attacker?
No, but I'll wager 40 quid it's that creepy bloke, Jason Blood.
Oh, yes, I see him.
I'll thank you to leave the detective work to me, sir.
But he's a madman, that one is. That black magic he's always carrying on about is all the evidence we need. Tonight, we go for Blood!
So this mob goes and finds Jason Blood, and
they're out for blood.
They are literally and figuratively looking for blood, and they find him. And as he sees the mob, he seems to be preparing some sort of spell, but he's captured by the mob before he can transform into his other half, and is captured. And so I guess they don't where did the crowd get magic cuffs? Are they holy water cuffs, or are they Do demons not like silver? I'm not up on my lore of why the handcuffs stop him from transforming, but
I kept expecting him to continue his transformation. I didn't quite understand that either. There must be some sort of like mythical reason why. If you know the reason why, tweet us or X us at DCAU Review and let us know the reason behind the cuffs. Maybe it's a Silver Age Etrigan vulnerability or something like that. We'll have to put our research department on that one.
Absolutely. But so Holmes and Watson are going over the clues, and very quickly Holmes, who's just real mean to Watson in this. Like, I haven't read a ton of like Sherlock Holmes stories or there's been like a bunch of different Sherlock. I mean, he's a public domain character. He pops up quite a lot in our popular culture, even still today. I've never seen a version where he's just very mean to Watson like he is in this episode. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Breaking news. Our research department got back to us. According to his Wikipedia page, Etrigan the Demon's weaknesses are holy powers, holy water, and iron. So they must have.
Oh, that makes sense. Because iron comes back at the end.
Yep.
Chekhov's metal alloy, I guess.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So Holmes and Watson. Holmes quickly dismisses Watson for suggesting that blood could be behind these terrible attacks on these women, as the person that did it was walking with a cane in their right hand, while blood is famously left-handed. This was very Batman 66. I enjoyed it.
Well, I also love that, like, traditionally, I remember our parents went to Catholic school, and like the idea that there was a thought or a superstition of Catholics, at least the 50 mm-hmm. years ago, that or 60 years ago, that that if you were left-handed, you were of the devil. So like the idea that Jason Blood is also left-handed, and that's like a traditionally superstitious, like demonic thing. I chuckled at that.
That is a great touch. That's I hadn't thought of the old Catholic superstition there as a fun little joke on top of that. But yes, so Holmes decides that in order to help Blood, who is about to be burned at a stake, they have to complete this spell, as he'd already formed the chalk on the ground, and there's an open bottle of some sort of mysterious potion. So they decide that they're going to finish the spell for Blood and try to save him. And at that moment, we cut back to present day, where we see Batman taking down Crazy Quilt. Man, who would have thought Crazy Quilt gets more than one episode in this? He doesn't speak in the voice of Jeffrey Tambor this time, mm-hmm. but he is featured again here, trying to rob some art museum. Batman takes him down quite easily this time, but as he's sort of about to cuff him, we see a mysterious ring form around him, and all of a sudden, Batman is right in the middle of 19th century London. And speaking to Holmes and Watson, Holmes being kind of showing off as he quickly deduces. He doesn't know who Batman is, of course, but he quickly deduces that he must be rich. He has good lineage because he's the son of the doctor, and that's why he's so fit. And that the bat symbol on his chest must represent some sort of childhood trauma.
A demon! He is a hero. It's obvious by the bright blue and yellow in his costume. The mask means he must be well-known, perhaps a wealthy entrepreneur with ample free time. Square jaw indicates strong lineage, perhaps a doctor's son. And the bat motif, most surely inspired by some childhood trauma. The masked bat, perhaps?
Actually, it's Batman. Sherlock Holmes, I presume.
How did you deduce my identity so quickly?
The hat.
Back to the matter at hand.
And Batman also quickly identifies Holmes as Sherlock Holmes because of his hat. So there we get this. It's not a big focus of the episode, but we do get this like little Holmes is a little like taken aback by Batman's own deductive abilities here. But Batman has to quickly spring into action to try to stop Blood from being burned at the stake. And as they all, after he is able to rescue him, he takes them back to Holmes and Watson, and they sort of discuss all of the issues and discuss that there's now been 8 women taken, and that there's a clue left in the newspaper that Holmes thinks he's deduced. But of course, Batman is even one step ahead of him.
That's right. Yeah. Holmes gives his explanation and his interpretation of this clue. And Batman goes back and clarifies very much so that Holmes is not correct, that it is, in fact, actually pointing towards Jason Blood, and that there may be 10 victims. This is all deduced and pulled out of the information from this clue. And as they're sitting there discussing this, there is a horrifying scream, and as Batman and Jason Blood and Holmes and Watson show up and determined to find out just what's going on, there is yet another woman being carried into the carriage by this mysterious shadowy figure. And in the process, by the way, we have Blood transforming into the demon Etrigan finally. And then as he attempts to stop the man from carrying the woman into the carriage, this magical walking stick pokes out with his skull face, and it creates a giant magic snake that sort of ensnares Etrigan at that time. Batman attempts him. It arrives just shortly after, but unfortunately, is not able to stop the mysterious figure from draining the soul out of his 9th victim. And as he steps out of the carriage, it is revealed that it is none other than Gentleman Jim Craddock. Batman happens to recognize him, of course. The Gentleman Ghost is his, of course, more well-known character, and is a villain in modern times for Batman. So this is his pre-ghost incarnation, I suppose. Craddock exclaims he's no ghost at all, and that he's there simply to turn Batman into a ghost. And he uses his magic walking stick to turn Batman's cape into a giant bat, which is just an incredible bit. We'll talk a lot about this stuff in visuals, but it's it takes Batman up and carries him away as it flies away. And then Jim Craddock is there and is able to escape. Etrigan does burn away the snake and is able to escape from that. But by that time, he needs to come to Batman's side and attempt to rescue him, as Batman is still taking on his bat cape, his cape turned into a bat. Thankfully, Etrigan is able to save Batman, burn away the cape using fire, but is recognizes at this point that Batman is somewhat injured and his costume is in tatters. By the way, I didn't mention it, but thank God that the Demon Etrigan talks in rhyme. My favorite feature of this character. And anytime he doesn't speak in rhyme, it feels like we're robbed of something. So
yes, the missed opportunity.
You survived the bat, but your costume's ruined, and we can't have that.
Yeah, absolutely. So he speaks in rhyme reveals that Batman needs a new costume. His costume that he transforms him into is none other than the Gotham by Gaslight costume. If you're not familiar with that costume, I invite you to check it out on the wonderful DC Universe app. It's the Infinite Universe app. It's a wonderful web. It's a wonderful app. It's just great. Every comic book you could ever think or want to read is there, available in the palm of your hand. Boy, I love that app. Isn't it such a great app, Liam?
It sure is.
So in the meantime, after Batman has transformed again into this, his costume at least is transformed into the classic Gotham by Gaslight costume, he now has a more suitable look, and they once again realize that the comatose woman is there, and they're trying to examine her. They reveal that she's alive, but they're still kind of confused as to what the plan is, and Batman explains to everybody around him just who Jim Craddock is and how he knows him and who he is in the future. And meanwhile, Batman and Etrigan return to Jason Blood's house, and specifically to his laboratory. Meanwhile, Holmes and Watson go off on their own, and Holmes is a little bit part of the whole episode is this sort of rivalry between Batman and Holmes as to who the greater detective is, and that they keep trying to one up each other and top each other. So at this point, Holmes realizes that he needs to be able to find where Craddock stays, and he has to go off on his own. He can't rely on Batman and Etrigan to assist him. He needs to sort of prove to himself, I guess, that he is the world's greatest detective by finding this hideout of Gentleman Jim's. Meanwhile, speaking of the hideout, we cut to the aforementioned hideout of Gentleman Jim, which happens to be an old windmill, of course. Where else would you hide as a evil stealer of souls? And it is revealed.
All the clock towers were booked up by the other supervillains in town, so he had to go for a windmill.
That's right, exactly. So he didn't put in his reservation for the clock tower this year. So so he's at the windmill, and he's speaking into a mirror. It is revealed at this point that, of course, Gentleman Jim is not working alone in this scenario. He has a bigger baddie, and he's using a mirror to speak to this Asteroth, not Asher Roth, the white rapper from the early to late 2000s, Asteroth, who is this demon that he's speaking to, speaks to him, talking about collecting these souls, and that once he has his 10th, he's fit to receive his reward of immortality, which is what Gentleman Jim is all about.
Holmes, wait! You mustn't go off alone!
My dear Watson, if I'm to solve the case before this Batman, that's exactly what I must do.
I need just one more cell to complete our task. But now I have some costumed freak chasing after me. He even knows my name, plus Holmes and another demon.
I sense the Rhymer's presence in Whitechapel. I know him well. Tread carefully, for you are not immortal yet.
Yes, Asteroth.
Meanwhile, back at Blood's hideout, he realizes that everything that Gentleman Jim is up to is connected to Asteroth. And we get a little bit of backstory about who Asteroth is, and we reveal that Etrigan teamed up with Merlin at one point in order to confine him to the underworld. I love cartoon names for hell. It's always the underworld, Hades, something like that. You're never going to call it hell.
Infernal dimension or something.
That's a good one. So they then kind of put two and two together and realize that that Gentleman Jim has been using this magic horn to capture the souls of his victims, and that he's going to offer 10 souls based on the little clue that they had, and that Batman had deduced. They have to offer 10 souls to Asteroth in order to potentially free him. And in return, Gentleman Jim will receive his gift of immortality. And this could unfortunately allow Asteroth to free himself. And just as this happens, Watson shows up and gives Batman and Blood the news that Holmes has located Gentleman Jim's whereabouts and has gone off on his own. And we see Gentleman Jim meeting Holmes outside of his windmill, and they have a brief battle between sword and magic walking stick. It's pretty vicious, back and forth. But Holmes is unfortunately quickly overwhelmed just as Batman arrives. But Gentleman Jim has more tricks up his sleeve as he pulls out a magic ring that summons a demon ogre from the underworld. And that, in the meantime, ties up both Etrigan, who has arrived to help Batman and support, and Batman, leaving Sherlock Holmes, unfortunately, very vulnerable, tied up. And Gentleman Jim is prepared to make him his 10th and final victim, as Batman and Etrigan are they're dealing with their own issue with their with this ogre demon.
What use have you for human souls?
I need them because, unlike you, I have no intention of dying ever.
Etrigan!
Yank the ring from its nose! Then back to the underworld the ogre goes!
No! I know how this is going to end. Don't do it!
When I return from the underworld, I shall be immortal. And then I'll deal with you personally.
Etrigan, thankfully, is familiar with the ogre demon and knows that the way to defeat him is for Batman to pull the ring out of his snout. So after some initial fisticuffs and jumping around, he's able to reach the ring and violently pull it from his face. We see some purple blood spatter out of his face. I kind of like that. It's not as brutal as you'd think, but because his face is turned away. But you do get some purple blood spattering out of his head. And in the meantime, we turn back and it's a little too late as Gentleman Jim has already overtaken Sherlock Holmes. He's stolen his soul and he's headed to the underworld through a purple portal. A lot of purple in this episode. A purple portal to the underworld with the entrance to the underworld coming from his windmill. And meanwhile, Batman and Etrigan are hot on his heels as they jump in to pursue. And that sets us up for our final act.
Absolutely. So Batman and Etrigan, as you mentioned, enter into this this underworld where we see Craddock meeting up with this this Astaroth character, another giant, massive demon. And as he prepares to give him the spells, he insists that the demon live up to his part of the bargain first and make him immortal. And as anyone who's ever read a story from the Bible all the way through to a modern video game, when you make a deal with a demon, it never quite works out the way you think it is. So the demon does promise that Craddock's soul will never leave the earth, is how he phrases it. And as we go there, we get our big final battle, which we'll talk about Etrigan and Astaroth. I'm always a big fan of when we get like two demons or angels or anything, any sort of like, otherworldly creatures interacting. And they just know each other and treat each other like work colleagues that hate each other. Mm-hmm. That's the vibes I get from Etrigan and Astaroth as they're interacting.
Welcome home, Etrigan.
It is your home now, and you won't break free. Even with those souls, you must get through me!
And meanwhile, of course, Craddock and Batman are also battling back and forth. And it seems like Batman's able to get the upper hand and knock out Craddock and also take the horn with all of the souls in it and his magic cane. And as Astaroth seems to have the demon on the ropes, Etrigan calls for the cane. And here's where we get Chekhov's medal returned as he stuffs the iron cane down Astaroth's throat, and that kills him.
Yeah.
If you're already in hell or the underworld, do you go to like second hell?
He ceased to exist, I think.
Okay. All right. We'll just go with that then. Yeah. Either way, he disappears, and Etrigan releases the horn, releasing all of the souls back as they bring Craddock back into the real world. And that seems all was well that ends well. We begin to wrap up the episode here. We get a little epilogue. First, we get a mention that Craddock's been arrested, turned over to the authorities. We see that Holmes has had his soul returned along with all of the other victims. And before Batman can go back to the present day, Holmes just has to know how exactly he deduced his identity so quickly. And Batman lets him know it's because, well, you're Sherlock Holmes. You're the world's greatest detective. And Batman leaves, and Sherlock is quite smug with himself.
Thank you for your help, Batman.
Before you depart, I must know, how did you really deduce my identity?
Everyone knows who you are. You're the world's greatest detective.
Indeed.
And what of Craddock?
I dare say he won't be causing any more trouble for humanity. The jury will make sure of that. No matter how many centuries I have to wait to face you, Batman, I will find you again. And I will have my revenge!
Here's our little horror movie Halloween ending here, as we get the reveal that they mentioned that Craddock was not able to escape justice. And we don't see the hanging or anything, or however, whatever method might have been used, but we do see a gravestone with the phrase, with the name Jim Craddock on it. And then we see the gentleman ghost arise out of the grave in all his glory. And he vows that no matter how many centuries it takes, he will live to haunt the Batman again one day, setting up his future appearances in this show, or perhaps past appearances by this point. But in chronological timeline, this is the first time they meet, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Batman Brave and the Bold wiki points out that it's both a sequel and a prequel, because I believe he appears and a previously aired episode. So
he vows revenge, and we get the big lightning strike as we see this ghoulish visage of the now deceased gentleman Jim. And that's where we end the episode. So look, overall, I think this episode is quite a bit of fun, as a lot of these Brave and the Bold episodes do. I do feel like we don't get maybe enough out of the idea of Batman teaming up with Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this episode is still spent, and it's an adventure show. It's aimed at a younger audience, as we always talk about. So I understand there's got to be things to punch and big colorful creatures to fight and all of that. But it would have been fun to see more. Like, we get, like I said, we get kind of the first meeting and the little bit at the end, and Holmes running off by himself to try to try to solve things without Batman's help. But like, I feel like there's maybe more to Batman and Sherlock Holmes having a detective off than we got out of this episode. But you know, that being said, it's still just a fun adventure and a real kind of fish out of water scenario, because it's not only are we not in Gotham City, we're not anywhere in the present day. So it's obviously a very unique setting, which we'll I'm sure we'll talk more about in visuals.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I remembered, it's interesting, I remembered, and I looked it up before we went on the air, but there's an actual Detective Comics issue, number 572, that features Batman meeting up with Sherlock Holmes. And I have never read the issue. Don't know if there's any correlation or anything that's borrowed from it. The title of the issue is The Doomsday Book, and it's written by Mike Barr, with a lot of different artists penciling in on, including Carmine Infantino, and you had Dick Sprang working as an inker on it. So you have some famous names there working on it. Worth a look up on the wonderful DC Universe Infinite app if you're interested. But yeah, that concept of these two great, literally the guy whose nickname is the world's greatest detective and the world's most, our world's probably most popular and well-known detective, for at least he was for, right, you know, a couple of decades.
He's the number one answer on Family Feud if they say name a famous detective.
Exactly, right.
It's Sherlock Holmes.
Precisely. So, yeah, that concept is certainly interesting. I don't disagree with you. I Every time we watch these episodes, where, you know, we usually have a lot of fun. This is no exception. Had a lot of fun in watching this episode. I don't think I stopped smiling from the beginning of it. Every time I watch these, there's so many layers of enjoyment. It's a cartoon. It's goofy in some levels. It's there's lots of homages and references to things if you know where to look. It's a Batman show. There's multiple different layers of enjoyment for these episodes, and I've never seen them before. There's several different ways that I end up in, or why I end up enjoying these episodes so much. This one, compared to some of the other ones that we've watched, I don't think that I enjoyed it quite as much. Not because of anything that I think that was wrong with the episode. It didn't feel like, with all the elements that we had, that we really got the most out of everything. I don't know. You don't get a ton of screen time. It feels like for any one of the characters, it's kind of split up pretty evenly until the very end, where you get Holmes's soul stolen from him, so he's kind of a non-factor. But I think if you had had some of these elements, maybe you've done the story with Batman and Sherlock Holmes, you leave Etrigan out of it, maybe you don't have the demon aspect of it, or you're not able to kind of tie that in. Okay. And maybe right. That's not quite as flashy or kid friendly or interesting to for a child to watch, because you don't have it's weird to say, but a demon running around, like the demon running around, you know, a yellow skinned red cloak, purple cape wearing demon running around. You don't have that Jack Kirby demon running around. So maybe it's less interesting, but if you also take Holmes out of it and you just have Batman and Etrigan, you kind of lose that sort of budding rivalry between Batman and Holmes of who's the best detective there. So yeah, I feel like not that we were robbed necessarily, but I just feel like maybe the elements that we had here weren't used or able to be used to their fullest because of time constraints, because of the story that we ended up telling. All of that stuff sort of led to me feeling like this was good, just not a great episode overall. You know, there's stuff that I enjoy. I love the idea of setting this up as sort of the introduction to this character that's already been used. So you give his backstory, and his backstory is tied into this weird time loop thing where Batman has to go back in time and ultimately is responsible for creating this guy, which if you think about it too hard, will make your brain hurt. But yeah, I do like those elements. I like the aspect of Batman being the detective, but you don't really get that sort of fleshed out too much. It's more, he kind of has this one-off little conversation where he's able to out detective Holmes, but then Holmes is able to find the windmill, and then you don't really have that final battle to determine who's the smarter. I kind of would have liked to have seen if, like, maybe Holmes was the one who's like, oh yes, you know, the Iron Cane is the way to defeat Astaroth or something like that. So you kind of get the, oh okay, and Batman uses that as inspiration to, like, you know, I'm going to make sure that I study everything that I know about Sherlock Holmes going forward, or whatever. I don't know. Somehow that Batman has changed through that. But yeah, overall, I still enjoyed the episode. It's still a lot of fun. It's, you know, this story is 18 minutes or 19 minutes or whatever it is of fun and, you know, fighting and a little bit of mystery and a little bit of supernatural mixed in there. So yeah, I ended up giving it a 7 out of 10 as far as plot is concerned. Definitely not the highest score I've given a Brave and the Bold episode, but still pretty strong.
Yeah, I went just 1 point lower. I went 6 out of 10. Definitely still enjoyed it. Still a fun way to spend 22 minutes, as we pretty much always say when we review one of these Brave and the Bolds. But yeah, like I said, I think it's a maybe there's like one element too many, like you said, and it's hard to pull one out without feeling like you're making the episode too boring. But yeah, it's like, oh, you know, a Batman and the demon chase the gentleman ghost through London sounds fun, and Batman meets Sherlock Holmes and they, you know, are trying to outdo each other with, you know, as they try to solve this, you know, incredible mystery, sounds like a lot of fun. And you mash it up, but like I said, you mash it all together, and you know, you have to have a certain amount of action and all that, which we'll talk about in a minute here. Yeah, like I said, still solid, still a good time, but yeah, maybe not reaching the heights as some of the other episodes that we've covered thus far. But that being said, we will move on here to our visuals and animation section. Once again, this episode directed by Michael Chang and animation by Dong Wu. And whatever we feel about the story reasons behind all of the action and the demons and ogres and cape monsters and all of that, man, this episode is just a hoot from the, like I said, the very unique setting and all the backgrounds, being that you're in the 1800s London with the cobblestone streets and the Victorian era dress. And I guess maybe first and foremost, we should talk about the, as you already alluded to, the introduction of another classic Batman. I mean, this show, as we've talked about over the years, pays homage to pretty much every era of Batman, at some point. And here we get the very classic, just pretty perfectly adapted, I thought, Gotham by Gaslight suit. I thought the most interesting thing to me is that he still has the you know, the coverings over the eyes, but they're not the bright white color. Like, they're this very beige color that kind of matches the rest of his suit. But gosh, that, I mean, that Gotham by Gaslight design is tremendous anyway. And then you know, just it adapts perfectly into this, you know, big boxy, bulky, Brave and the Bold style.
No, absolutely does. The translation, as so often is the case when we see some of the different suits that we've seen, and the homages that the artist paid to the classic Batman designs. Yeah, this one is nearly spot on. I dare say improvement, because I think that Gotham by Gaslight, if I recall, he actually doesn't have the lenses, so he has the kind of just has correct. The general blinking human eyes that stand out. So I dare say, just as a aesthetically pleasing choice, I approve of the lens, the choice to give him those tan looking lenses. But yes, that costume is so neat to look at, and the adaptation, obviously, from the classic comic book. You could have done anything at this point, but I wonder if this episode was written to use that costume, or if they had written the episode and they're like, well, we got to use the Gaslight costume. Like, which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah.
Or if they were sort of harmonious in how they chose to do this. But yeah, I loved that. Again, it's one of those things, if like a kid isn't gonna know what that is, like, they're not gonna, you know, Batman's got a cool different suit. But the adults that are watching this with their kids, or the adults that are watching this and doing a review of it for podcast,
yeah.
are looking at that and going, oh, that's so cool. Like, they did it's the Gotham by Gaslight suit. Like, that's so awesome. So yeah, that alone, you know, gave my score a couple extra points. You know, we talk about it, I think, each and every time we look at these Brave and the Bold episodes, is they're just so artistically so done so well. Like, everything about them both modernizes it with the way that they use the animation, but is so faithful to the original designs of things, whether it's the classic Jack Kirby Etrigan demon, like we mentioned, the bright yellow skin, the soulless eyes, he's got the red tunic and the purple cloak and all of that. And we get some Kirby crackle even throughout with some of the designs of the magic from Gentleman Jim's weapons. We get Sherlock Holmes. I don't know if he was based on to look like one of the famous Sherlock Holmes actors, perhaps. I'm sure we could probably get somebody who knows that stuff better than us, but clearly those guys seem to be based on at least somewhat realistic looking people. But yeah, the set piece, the fact that they're set during this 19th century London. What a cool concept. You have horses and carriages, and then on top of it you have these fantastic beasts, ogres and demonic entities and all of that. And then the set changes from this dark, muddy, brown, gray nighttime Victorian era to the underworld, the Hades, whatever you want to call it, the hell landscape that is these purple and orange and reddish hues, yes, and the lava, the fiery lake of lava, and you get the reveal of the full Astaroth beast, this gigantic monster with horns and hooves and all that.
Him rising out of the lava as Craddock is standing there, and you sort of slowly realize how big this guy is as he's just continues to dwarf Craddock more and more as he kind of begins to stand upright on his he's got like the hooven feet and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it was an impressive drawing, it was an impressive design from the art team here. Just incredible. And then again, you have all of that culminate in this fight between Batman and Etrigan and him. And that's not even mentioning some of the magic stuff that we talked about, the magic giant snake that sort of ensnares mm-hmm. Etrigan in the first little tussle between him and Gentleman Jim. And then I just thought it was so cool that he turns Batman's cape into like an actual living, it's not an actual living bat. It's his cape with like bat-like features. His cape is like anthropomorphized into a bat-like creature. So it's got like a mouth that's shaped like the bat logo, and it's got these mm-hmm. creepy eyes, but it's clearly still made of cloth. It's really, really trippy. I thought that it was again, they had a lot of fun doing that, and then Batman is having this fight with this living, breathing cape. Really, really, really fun. So many neat little visual things that they did there. And we didn't even talk about like the opening, the prologue, that in and of itself. Yep. Lots of cool visuals there. I feel like I've taken up everything to talk about. So I'll shut up now and see if there's anything else that you want to touch on.
No, the only other thing I think that you didn't cover in depth was that opening vignette, as we talked about with Batman and the Flash taking on Scream Queen and the Scarecrow. One, I think I love the Scarecrow design on this show. It's not quite the Super Friends Scarecrow, but I feel like in retrospect, at least as a kid, I always thought when he's just like the skinny little Scarecrow guy was kind of lame.
Mm-hmm.
But man, in this show, it's perfect. Like you couldn't put like the new Batman Adventure Scarecrow in this show. It just wouldn't work.
It reminds me a little bit of like I guess early 90s sort of the I dare say like the Nightfall era, that Kelly Jones comic book cover style. It's very like he's kind of exaggerated, his shoulders are a little bit wider and kind of
really actually, long limbs.
It's actually like Scarecrow, like he's got like squared off shoulders, and the way his cap sort of droops down over the bag head kind of makes him feel a little bit more menacing. It works. It's definitely a lot scarier than the Batman the Animated Series version of that style of Scarecrow, and certainly a little bit more haunting than the Super Friends version, for sure.
Absolutely. And the fear gas effect I thought was pretty neat. One when they first hit Batman and the Flash with it, and sort of they're just sort of slowly walking, and then all of a sudden this fire sort of bursts out from behind Scarecrow, and his face kind of transforms. And then as we mentioned, when the Flash turns things around on Scream Queen, when she sort of sees this sort of crazy red and yellow lightning being that takes the place of the Flash when she's exposed to the fear toxin, and that's great. And as mentioned, as silly as it is, the visual gag of Scarecrow. I love the scythe too. Like he only really uses the scythe. I think it came with his action figure, his Kenner action figure for Batman the Animated Series. But he only really uses it in Trial when he cuts off Scarface's head.
Right.
So like seeing him actually like get in a fisticuffs with Batman with the scythe, I really enjoyed. and Batman breaking it, and then him, the juxtaposition of him running, grabbing the door, opening it, and then sort of the camera slowly panning up to the mountain of pumpkins to see the Flash standing there is a great bit as well. And then the cutaway where the Flash looks right into the camera, very Looney Tunes, very Chuck Jones classic animation. As he looks into the camera and gives the one-liner about, oh, I thought I was the only guy who can disappear faster than I can. That's right. And then we get the wipeout as the circle closes in. Some great visual gags in that opening bit as well. So for all those reasons, I thought I had to give this a pretty high score, and I ended up settling on a 9 out of 10 for my visuals.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually gave it the exact same score, a 9 out of 10. The only thing I think we didn't touch on, you mentioned it when we were discussing the plot, but I really, really loved the reveal at the end of the classic gentleman ghost design as the ghost comes up from the grave. By the way, don't know how they got away with intimating that he was that he was killed, or that, capital punishment took care of him. I don't know how that works, but okay. You got that past. I guess you had to explain how he got turned into a ghost without out and out saying that he was hung. So they didn't show the actual death, but showed that he had died. So, so he comes out as the ghost, and then the lightning strike and the wipe of seeing like the zombie ghoulish version of Gentleman Jim revealed within the gentleman ghost form. Really neat. I loved that transformation. It gives that little spooky scary bit at the end there. Overall high scores for both of us for very good reasons. We could probably go on talking about this for a little while longer if need be.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just a smorgasbord, as you like to say, in the visual department this week. And we can't say enough great things about it. But we will move on here for time constraint reasons and talk about music. Once again, music this week by, of course, the Dynamic Music Partners. And one thing I noticed, like when the opening vignette, we have the very classic Raven the Bold, a lot of horns, a lot of bongos. Like that's mm-hmm. the signature music for action beats. But I felt like as we moved into we went back in time, we get some different take on that. I don't know what the instrument is, whatever the stringed music that always plays when you're in old timey London. we brought that in for the foggy nights on the streets of London as Holmes and Watson are walking around, or even that first scene where the woman is walking and Craddock pulls up in the carriage. They is probably not surprising, our composers for the week certainly always relish, I think, a little bit of a genre change or an homage to a different type of music than they may normally get to do on the show. And I thought they changed it up a little bit, but certainly we got more sort of traditional action music for the big fights at the end.
Yeah, you do get the simulated strings or synthesizer for a lot of the fights there. I did point out or did notice make a point of noting rather that the transformation from our classic Brave and the Bold costume to the Gotham by Gaslight is sort of accompanied by this really neat choral, like a chorus of voices, sort of haunting, sort of spooky sounding a piece that comes in the background as we reveal this new suit for Batman to wear. I really liked that. I also noted of the we do get like what I would say is classic Halloween spooky cartoon music with a scary organ at the end with the reveal of the gentleman ghost coming out of the actual grave, and then the lightning strike. There's some real heavy organ classic mm-hmm. sounding monster movie or Scooby-Doo, whatever you want to put back there, music sounding sound behind it. And then I think I also noted we get we get just as you mentioned, some action fare, but it is heavier on strings and less on the percussion. I think, again, I think you mentioned it's likely because of the set pieces and where we were set on the episode itself. So the composers took advantage of that and did something a little bit different for how the episode sounded. But yeah, overall, I didn't have anything that was other than those two pieces, the reveal of the Gotham by Gaslight and then the reveal sort of mirroring that the Gentleman Goes to the End. Both with some pretty neat pieces there. I ended up going with a 7 out of 10 for this week's music. What about you?
Yeah, I was actually at the exact same score, a 7 out of 10 for music there. Like I said, I always like when we get to hear our composers stretch their legs, so to speak, and change things up from the kind of established musical identity of the show. So get a change of visual scenery and a change of audible scenery as well with our music this week. So a great job there. And that will bring us to our final category of the day, Cal. That is, of course, voice acting. And it's not a huge cast, but we do have some notable names, which I'll mention here just briefly. I don't even think she has a name, but playing one of by the Gentleman Ghost is Marie Devon, who of course is Summer Gleason in Batman the Animated Series. So Andrea Romano bringing back an old standby for some small role there. Always fun to hear her. But mentioned playing Astaroth, he's very relevant if you're listening to this when it comes out. Tony Todd is voicing Astaroth, incredible voice. Maybe best known, if you saw him, you know him as the original Candyman, the horror movie that was kind of a cult classic. And I think they did a remake like 2 or 3 years ago, and I think he was in that as well.
Okay, interesting.
But also has a pretty prolific voice acting career, including he just voiced Venom in the brand new Spider-Man video game that just hit PlayStation 5. So a very relevant voice actor to talk about. But yeah, I love him as the big booming demon and the way he talks, both in the sinister way when he's sort of negotiating with Craddock to get the souls, and then him and Etrigan going back and forth. A lot of fun. Just a big booming scary voice. Does a great job.
Yeah. I imagine maybe some slight modulation done to his voice, to make it a little echoey, more echoey, or to deepen a little bit. But yeah, it's he definitely sounds like a spooky, scary demon that I wouldn't want to deal with. So yeah, I'd say that in and of itself is a ringing endorsement.
Absolutely. And then playing our Holmes and Watson, we have Ian Buchanan. Really, I would say pretty legendary soap opera actor. I think we've talked about him before. The name certainly rang a bell, but he's done something like 600 episodes of The Bold and the Beautiful, and then like another 250 episodes of General Hospital.
Holy
cow. Like he had to be doing these at the same time at some point, which is just insane. If you know anything about the schedule that those shows cut, like they're filming all the time, and they're filming pretty constantly. So just what a schedule this guy has kept over the last 30 years or so. But playing Ian Buchanan playing Holmes, and as mentioned, Jim Piddick playing Watson. Mr. Piddick, I believe, played Alfred in the Under the Red Hood movie.
So, Ian Buchanan also, by the way, the voice of the Ultra Humanite on Justice League.
Ah, there. I knew, that's, you know, perfect. I knew I heard him.
Yep. We had definitely, I was like, this sounds way too familiar. A guy who's double dipping on daytime soap operas. We definitely talked about him and his name rang true. So yes, the voice of the Ultra Humanite.
There you go. So yeah, like I said, we don't, I wish we got more play between him and our Batman, but like I said, I do like the like almost like disdain that this Holmes, Mr. Buchanan, has for his Watson in this. He's just like, I think the first thing he says is like, "Don't be an idiot, Watson."
He's just he like, said, "Don't be an imbecile."
That's right. He's too, yeah, he's too cultured to say idiot. That's but, right. Exactly. But yeah, there's like this very like smug superiority about this Holmes, which I which I kind of like. Like I said, it's not I feel like the typical characterization that you get of him in the, at least in the stuff I've seen. So I thought that was kind of fun, them playing off each other. There's some fun comedy to that as they, you know, Watson keeps, you know, asking questions and Holmes immediately shoots it down. And then, as mentioned, Mr. Buchanan, having to play sort of the jealous and defiant guy who's sort of being upstaged by Batman's appearance here is a lot of fun as well. So I think they both do a great job.
Yeah, they are perfect. I think they do a very very good job of. Are they actually British? Or are they putting on accents? I'm not sure. Maybe that speaks to
Buchanan is, but okay. I'm not sure. Piddick certainly. That's this. This might be racist. That Piddickshire sounds like a British name, an English name.
It's just based on how the name sounds. If they're both traditionally English, they fit it very well. I agree with you. Mr. Buchanan certainly seems, based on his Ultra Humanite, also seems to be traditionally a authentic English accent there. But yeah, they have chemistry together. They also then have chemistry with our lead, of course, Mr. Dietrich Bader, spoiler alert, playing Batman. But yeah, all the characters I think work together well on the episode. I didn't have any complaints as far as anybody sounding like they were phoning it in or that they weren't cast appropriately. The voices seem to match the characterization of everybody, and I agree with you. I think their chemistry was needed certainly for the episode with our leads, but just good. Everything was really done really well with their casting and their performances.
Absolutely. And then playing Gentleman Jim, we have Greg Ellis, who is maybe best known live action, at least for he's in the I think a couple of the J.J. Abrams, Chris Pine Star Trek reboot movies from a few years ago. Okay. It's 18th or 19th century London. You want a over the top, you know, cackling, mustache twirling villain, and he gives you what the doctor ordered, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. He sounds evil. You want to hear him. You want to see him get his comeuppance at the end. He's a bit terrifying, stealing people's souls. We're openly working with a demon and only caring about his own immortality. So I actually do like the nuance that he puts in once he quote receives his immortality at the end, where he just kind of looks at himself and he's like, I feel incredible, or whatever he says, untouchable. You know, it's a small shift in the way that he kind of characterizes him after that, but it's like he has this hubris of, well, I'm not able to die now, so you know, my soul won't pass the earth, so you know, I have this cockiness about me. I felt like the there's a slight nuance in the way that he changes his performance there that I appreciated.
Absolutely, yeah, he does a good deal, and that like I said, that final little postscript we get of him vowing revenge, and he's going to haunt Batman no matter how long it takes. He's great there. Is again just exactly as over the top as you'd want to you want him to be. And then as our other co-star, at least on the heroic side, we have Dee Bradley Baker, another voice actor we've talked about a trillion times on this show. Playing both the demon and Jason Blood. And I mean, we've already touched on it, Cal, but he has the most important thing down, which is that he speaks in rhyme when he's Etrigan. So every time he transforms into Etrigan, it's just a joy because he's doing the rhyme thing the whole time. So you know, he's got a good cadence to the rhyme too. It's a very musical way of speaking. It's not just that he rhymes. Like it's very he's a great poet as well. And yeah, Mr. Baker does a great job as Etrigan, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. It's also not his in the DCAU, he also got to voice Etrigan, but not the standard Etrigan. He was baby Etrigan in the kid stuff episode. He's credited with being that voice. And of course he's prolific with with I guess he's right up there with Frank Walker with doing his animal voices, because he's credited with a bunch of other. I think he's Woof in the Once and Future thing, and he's a couple other different animals throughout the DCAU. But yeah, he gets to shine and do more than just weird animal noises and snarls and. I agree. I don't know what they did to his voice for the demon effect, but it's not, doesn't feel overly produced in a way that, that makes it feel, you know, otherworldly. It does feel half human in a way. So yeah, it's good. As you mentioned, the best part is the fact that he's able to deliver his rhymes authentically in those voices while also rhyming his lines. So yeah, that's that already had a upper echelon score for me, since he was rhyming his words, and then the performance on top of it probably added another half point or so.
Absolutely. And then of course we'll talk, I should also mention Andy Milder as the voice of the Flash in our little opening. I think it's Mr. Baker also doing the Scarecrow, but
yep.
But yes, of course, our main event, as we've talked about him numerous times on our show, not only as this character, but also, of course, as the voice of Zeta. We once again have Diedrich Bader on as Batman. And and this goes to the plot and to his performance as Batman. He's fighting Crazy Quilt in the museum. A giant portal forms around him. He gets dropped in the middle of 19th century London, and he's like, yep, all right, got it. Let's figure it out. I'm on it. Like, doesn't even flinch, doesn't even blink, doesn't have one moment of doubt or fear. He's just right to action, which is just, again, so perfect for this, you know, this very Silver Age infused Batman. Just gets right to action, goes and saves Etrigan from the burning at the stake, and then he's right on to deduce the clues that have been left in the newspaper and all that. Just great. And once again, unsurprisingly, Mr. Bader's great, not only playing off of D. Bradley Baker as Etrigan, as mentioned, but also playing off of Ian Buchanan as he and Sherlock have their little rivalry as well, and him as well with Craddock as well. There's the moment where he's like kind of calling out to Craddock and is telling him like, don't go through with it. I know how this ends. It doesn't end well for you. Like he's trying to save him even in the 11th hour here, even though he already knows what happens. So I think he's again, not surprisingly, Mr. Bader does another great job as Batman. And this is a little earlier in the show. This might be the earliest episode of the show we've looked at, because this is season one. And man, he was just firing on all cylinders from the early days of the show.
Yeah, what's so great about this Batman, to your point, is he's the most unmoved person, right, in all the situations. Like, no matter how crazy the villain is, it's borrowing from that sort of Adam West irony of like, everything around him is so unserious and so campy and so goofy, and he is the most serious person in the room on the show, right? He's unflappable. Nothing, you know, is bothers him. It doesn't faze him in any sort of way. That, like you mentioned, he's transported back multiple centuries to meet this literary hero, Sherlock Holmes, and he's just like, yep. And he's immediately having a verbal sparring session with him about, you know, deducing and sort of matching wits for wits with him. So yeah, that's what makes this characterization of the Batman so great, is that it is ultra serious. Everything around him is goofy and somewhat comedic, and he's the straight man. He plays the straight man to a T, and without a convincing vocal performance from your Batman, that falls very flat. And it's consistent. Mr. Bader's performance from every episode that I've watched of this show, as you mentioned, we're here in the first season, we've reviewed third season, we've reviewed second season episodes, we may have even gotten into the fourth season at some point. But yeah, it's consistent across the show that he believes he's the smartest person in the room. He's the Batman. nothing was going to phase him. He's going to take care of the problem. He's going to kick the bad guy's butt at the end, and justice will prevail. Like, that's Absolutely. That's the characterization that comes across, and that is so well communicated in that even-keeled, unbothered performance from Mr. Bader in every episode that we've done so far. So yeah, unsurprisingly, we're singing the praises of a legendary voice actor here.
Absolutely. So yeah, I think on the strength of Mr. Bader, as well as some of our other casts that we've talked about today, I gave voice acting a very strong 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I actually went with the same exact score, 8 out of 10. So we ended up with our final three categories here coming up with the same exact score.
Absolutely. So that will get us towards our final scores now, Cal. And tallying everything up, I have a final score of 30. What are you? Are you 31?
Yeah, I'm a 31.
All right, then I have 30 because I was one lower. All right. I have a final score of 30 out of 40.
And as we mentioned, we agreed in 3 out of our 4 categories. Not a straight agreement this this time, but 3 out of 4 ain't bad, as they say. So I ended up with just a point higher, Liam, with a 31 out of 40.
Nice. And so that will so we can wrap it up. As we always say, when we go to the Elseworlds, we don't really talk about rewatchability in the same way because we don't watch every single episode of these other worlds we visit. But again, I feel like we say this every time we do a Brave and the Bold episode. This gets a thumbs up for me as just like a very fun, simple and fun concept. Batman back in time meets Sherlock Holmes, fight some demons. Like it moves at a clip, and it's just a hoot. So yeah, I mean, this one is definitely one. If you're new to this show, or if you haven't gone back to it in a long time, yeah, I think this is one that you could definitely look at for this series.
I think based on the setting alone, the interaction with the Etrigan character, who's always fun, the homages to Gotham by Gaslight, the Sherlock Holmes interaction, Gentleman Ghost was always like an interesting character to me ever since I first learned about him. I thought he was an interesting, like visually, he's a very cool looking character. So the idea that this is his origin story that you get, and he's featured in other episodes of The Brave and the Bold. You kind of, if you're going to watch The Brave and the Bold, this is an important episode because you learn, either depending on if you're watching in order or out of order, you either learn that this character is going to return, or you understand where this character came from and why he has this vendetta against Batman. Either way, so yeah, it's kind of mandatory if you're watching Brave and the Bold. But as far as rewatchability, I'd recommend it. I don't think there's an episode of Brave and the Bold that I wouldn't, if somebody was like, should I watch this episode, I don't think so far there hasn't been an episode where I'm like, nah, you can skip it. I'm like, no, have fun, like enjoy the 22 minutes. It's action-packed, it's fun to watch. If you're a DC fan, you'll smile a bunch of times at all these different references and nods and different homages to different DC history throughout. And it's got some funny dialogue and some great voice acting and all that along the way. So, yeah, as far as would I recommend it? Absolutely, I would.
Totally agree. Couldn't have said it any better. Cal, and that will begin to wrap us up for this week. We want to thank everybody for listening, whether you do so on Google Podcasts, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. We do appreciate it. It's a great way to support the show, listening and downloading the episodes. And as mentioned, you can also help us out by subscribing to the Pod Tower YouTube channel at youtube.com/thePodTower. But as far as we talk about ways to support us, well, first, you can follow us on your social media app of choice, whether that is the artist formerly known as Twitter, or now called X, or Instagram. You can find us at DCAU Review. I'm going to post a thread this week, I think. I think I'm going to post one thread this week and see if there are any takers.
Depending on who you listen to or believe, it's the new frontier. You can build your own unique audience there if there's anybody on there. That's just Zuckerberg trying to convince people it's worth your time and energy.
Yeah, but I feel like the old appeal of Twitter was like the built-in 15 years of like weird energy and anger and and inside jokes and everything that right. the Threads has not yet built up, but maybe someday we'll continue to I haven't shut the account down, at least. It's connected to the Instagram. I don't even know if I could anyway.
That's
but,
right.
But anyway, yes, you can follow us on any of those sites at DCAU Review. That's another great way to support us. And as mentioned, another great way to support us is that if your podcast app that you're listening to us on allows you to leave a review or to rate our show, that is a great way to help us. Giving us 5 stars and leaving a review helps bump us up in those all important search algorithms and gets some new. And in fact, Cal, we have another review to read out this week.
Yes, indeed, we do. And just a reminder, as Liam said, if you leave your own 5-star review and you live in the continental United States, we'll send you a little thank you gift for doing so. Our first two reviews went out, thank you gifts went out this week. So thank you to our reviews. We've had, I think, 3 or 4 in the last 5 weeks. So we're on a pretty good hot streak here. We're bribing people and it's working. It's an effective business model. Who'd have thunk?
We're not above begging. Like if you would like me to shoot a video of me literally on my knees with my hands clasped, I'll do it.
That's right. We are looking for as many of these reviews as possible. Don't forget also, even if you've left a review in the past, word on the street is Apple will allow you to read to leave another review. So, hey, if you want to double dip, I don't care. Leave another 5-star review and tell people, copy and paste like Dietrich Bader's Wikipedia page as the explanation. Just leave 5 stars. I'll still send you a little gift. Absolutely. But this week's review, Liam, comes from, it looks like Nuber, that's with a KN, Nuber 375. And their heading starts with "Fantastic DCAU podcast" with 2 exclamation points. Mm-hmm. The review says, "I grew up with BTAS, but I didn't know why I loved it until I went through their catalog and the DCAU as a whole. Cal and Liam create such a vibe that's inviting, but makes you feel like you're right in the room with them. The humor can make you burst out laughing in the worst places, and the running gags keep you coming back. Their dives into the episodes are also great and made me think some episodes in ways I never had and made me appreciate some episodes I didn't care for before I listened to the pod. Overall, a top-tier podcast with some great laughs and an even better love for the DCAU and other adjacent projects. I look forward to every episode," and then parenthetically, "even Zeta." There you go. Managed to get in some Zeta project love. Well done, Nuber 375. If that is you, send us a message on one of our social media pages, Instagram or X, and we'll send a little thank you. So thank you for taking the time to do that. That's a wonderful review. It really keeps me and Liam going and lets us know that those Zeta project episodes are not for nothing, I suppose.
Absolutely. Yeah. I especially appreciate the part about, maybe giving them a new reason to revisit some episodes they didn't particularly like and find things to like about them. We talk about, I mean, that's the whole point of the little ranking system. I feel like that we do is it's not to give, that we're passing judgment on these shows so much as it is, sometimes the episode's not that, the story ain't that good, but it has great visuals or whatever. So I love the idea. I feel like we go through that same thing every week when we do a review. And it's great to hear that some listeners are also getting that out of the podcast when they go back and revisit them for our show. So yes, thank you so much for leaving that review. And as mentioned, that's a great way to support us. If you'd like to support us in a more direct financial way, there are a couple ways you can do that in the show notes of this very episode, including a donate button. Up a monthly little donation that helps put some caffeine in our system, buys us a couple coffees a month, and keeps us going, keeps Cal awake on Friday nights when he has to edit this show. we definitely appreciate that. Another great way to support us is, of course, that you could head to our store, link also in the show notes, and you could pick yourself up a shirt or a hat or a mug or something. And you can support us that way as well. But however you choose to support us, we do thank you. And Cal, as we begin to wrap up this week and look toward next, I believe it's time to head back to where it all began.
That's right, Liam. The month of November is going to bring us back home with more Batman the Animated Series. We are just sort of powering through this this latter half of this this BTOS run here. I'm a little bit scared thinking about how just a little while ago it felt like we just had an infinite number of these episodes remaining, but the numbers are counting down here. It's very interesting. So yeah, we kick things off next week with an episode that I do not remember liking at all as a child. So it'll be interesting to see if I can pull out some of the more adult themes for this episode and appreciate it on another level next week. But we will be reviewing the very memorable episode, Baby Doll.
Yeah, this was not a popular one in our household when we were kids, for sure. But certainly one that I know holds a very, very special place in a lot of people's hearts. And I certainly look forward to going back to it with fresh eyes. I have not seen this episode in many, many years. So definitely look forward to getting back into that next week. But until then, I'm Liam.
And I'm Cal.
And we'll talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.